You know what? Get over it, because we've got a country to run and that's what I've demanded of them.
I wish ScoMo and Joshy every success.
Government members do not trust each other.
I'm a bit lost for words. That doesn't happen very often. The Wrap.
Wrap. Because it is that point of the week. Yeah, it's Friday, time to wrap some of the biggest stories of the past few days. And with me to do just that is Karen Middleton, political editor of the Saturday Paper, and Josh Gordon, RMIT ABC Fact Check Economics and Finance Editor. Josh, let's start with you, because you've got a former life too, closely involved with the coverage of Victorian politics.
Yeah, look, I do. I was state political editor at The Age for 6 or 7 years or something like that, so I still have a big interest in Spring Street.
What's your gut feeling on this? I mean, the polling shows a fairly clear margin to the Labor Party.
Yeah, I mean, I think gut feelings can be a dangerous thing in politics, but I mean, I always like to look at the trend, and I think you'd have to say that at this late stage, the trend is not favouring the coalition. In fact, if anything, it's looking slightly worse for them than it was, say, 4 or 5 months ago. There are a couple of polls today. One of them put it at two-party preferred terms, 54-46, and the other one, I think, was 53-47. Mm. So that points to a reasonably decisive win for the Labor Party. People do say, you know, polling's becoming harder and harder, and you've got to look at the marginal seats and things like that. And also, Labor has a lot of seats that... you know, that they need, if they want to gain seats, a lot of them have quite significant margins that they need to sort of eat into. So that could change the equation. There could always be surprises, but, you know, you have to say, and also the other thing is you look at the betting markets and they're clearly favouring the Labor Party at the moment by quite a considerable margin.
Well, there was an interesting analysis. Jack the Insider in The Australian today did a betting market look at sort of seat by seat. And if you actually pick apart electorate by electorate, the picture becomes more complex.
Yeah, it's always more complex. I mean, you can resort to that sort of tortured cephology, which political insiders like to talk about.
Yes.
And I remember the last election, there was a lot of that as well, and people were saying, oh, no, the coalition will cling on. And, of course, you know, they became the first one-term government in Victoria since 1955, so can't take these things too seriously.
Big surprise. Let's have a listen to the leaders. Now, here's a snippet from a leaders' debate that was on ABC Radio Melbourne yesterday.
You have failed over
it's
4 years.
It's a very political issue.
Safe.
I will continue
will
to invest in TAFE and you'll cut it because it's what you always do.
You will lie in any way
do.
Possible. And here you have a Premier who has failed to keep this state safe, asking for 4 years. How dare you say that to people like Nolene Nolan, who woke up with two armed people with a knife to her throat? And then you say, well, that's got something to do with the TAFE system. It's got something to do that your bail system has failed.
Josh Gordon, we hadn't played with that audio at all. They were just talking over each other.
I actually thought that there was a problem with that audio. I was kind of looking at you with wide eyes, Jonathan.
No, there's a problem with politics.
I think there's a problem with politics, yeah. Look, I mean, I think it encapsulates a lot about this election. I mean, it's a slightly sort of unedifying spectacle hearing that. But I think Matthew Guy wants to talk about crime and, you know, Labor wants to, Daniel Andrews wants to talk about the TAFE system, health, other things like that. So if you listen to the coalition, it's all about law and order. And certainly crime is an issue that's really got inside people's heads in the lead up to this election. There's no doubt about that. It's a very important issue. I mean, there are other things, you know, there's always other things. There's health, education, infrastructure. Melbourne's growing by about, you know, well over 2,000 people a week. So there's a lot of pressure. People are feeling it. There's cost of living pressures. There's energy policy concerns, all sorts of things. And, you know, crime's only one thing. And there's also within the crime question, it's not necessarily clear that the coalition's way out in front on that issue.
I mean, it's an interesting thing, Karen Middleton, to bring you in on this. I mean, because that thing of crime, that's going to be, you know, when the federal people look at these results next week, how that's played out as an issue is going to resonate in Canberra as well.
Yeah, you've certainly seen the federal government turning to law and order issues and crime issues and connecting them with immigration issues, actually, in the recent past. And law and order's an old favourite in election campaigns. We've seen over the past, I don't know how many, federal election campaigns, a lot of talk about CCTV camera installation and all those kinds of things that contribute to a sense of security at a local level. And of course, generally speaking, the law and order issues are state issues, not federal issues, but federal governments often find the way to connect with them as well.
How eagle an eye will the Federal Party have on the Victorian result, and what will that do to the stocks of Scott Morrison, do you think, if Matthew Guy should be unsuccessful tomorrow?
Look, it's a bit difficult to know how it would translate federally. I mean, people, the old saying is that people can distinguish between federal and state issues. Mm. Having said that, there's always a little bit of angst between federal and state parties about if there's a bit of negative sentiment about a ruling party federally, then state governments don't necessarily want to be tangled up with a federal election. They don't want to be in proximity to one. And we've got one in Victoria now in November. We're going to see a New South Wales state election in March of next year, and then the federal election has to be held by May. So we are seeing two state polls quite close to a federal poll. What it will mean for Scott Morrison's standing is a bit difficult to know. He's got quite a big job ahead of him, because we know he only became Prime Minister in August, September. And he is sort of reintroducing himself to the Australian people. So he's grabbing hold of a lot of high-profile issues to try and connect with people now, issues that people care about, that poll strongly in terms of resonance with the population. And he's desperately trying to make sure that they have a sense of who he is, so that he's not going into the election at a disadvantage. But they'll watch the Victorian election, no doubt, and see what connects with people, and maybe they can use those issues in a federal campaign.
More on those federal things in a moment, but Josh, just before we leave Victoria, I mean, perhaps the lesson out of it might be that issues like infrastructure, like crime, aren't to be dealt with as sort of cartoonishly as often they are in politics. Maybe this Victorian result will show that voters are actually looking for something a bit more nuanced and something a bit more concrete in those areas.
I agree with that. I think crime is an interesting case study there, because often it is dealt with in very black and white terms, and there's a lot of hyperbole surrounding it as well. I like to think that Victorians are, you know, able to have a bit more of a nuanced view on crime. You know, this idea that you just sort of lock people up, you know, if they breach their bail, including, you know, traffic offences and that sort of thing. Mm. I wonder what impact that might have down the track, because, of course, crime is something that can take years to sort of foment, in a sense. I don't think it's a situation where a government suddenly gets elected and all these would-be criminals say, great, there's a new government in, let's go and commit some crime. Yes. I think these are problems that have a pipeline,
may have social roots.
Pipeline, yeah. So,
look, if you're in Victoria, if you're in Melbourne, if you're voting tomorrow, what's your sense of the big issues? Let us know on the text line 0418 226 576. Is it crime? Is it infrastructure? Are you convinced by the arguments of either party? 0418 226 576. Wrapping the events of the week with Karen Middleton and Josh Gordon. Karen, the big emphasis for the Morrison government in these last few days has been around anti-terror legislation and, this move to potentially strip citizenship from people convicted of terrorism offences. Here's Home Affairs Minister Peter Dutton. He was on RN Drive yesterday. This is what he had to say about dual citizens.
Most of these people now are people who are born in Australia in the second or third generation. Their parents or grandparents have come to Australia. So gone to school here. They've, in some cases, been born here to parents that migrated over a period of time. So that's the situation. So if somebody is convicted of a terrorist offence, then in that situation, we can take citizenship away.
Karen, I mean, the Prime Minister is saying that he wants to introduce legislation in this coming sitting fortnight. Do you think they've sort of done the groundwork here? Has this been thought through to a point where it could be legislated?
Well, there is some legislation covering this area already. So this is not brand new. They have already legislated to strip citizenship from certain people who've been convicted of terrorist offences that were punishable by 6 years jail or more. So there was a sort of a level, a benchmark set for how serious those offences had to be. Mm. And they've changed that slightly. So now they've removed that benchmark. So if you're convicted of any kind of terrorism offence, whether it be an offence of thinking about planning a terrorist attack or having actually committed one. Now, if you hold citizenship of another country, or, and here's another change that they're making, the government is reasonably satisfied that this person would be eligible for other citizenship, then they'll strip the citizenship of you and deport you. But
if you can't be deported, they're saying today, you'll languish in immigration detention.
Yeah, and this is where it gets very complicated, because it's against international law to render somebody stateless. And this seems to be where the government is relying on this as a sort of legal technicality, where it says it only has to be reasonably satisfied that that person should be able to qualify for other citizenship if they can do that through family or whatever. So it's not clear what the standing of that is in international law. We haven't seen any more detail than that. I guess we'll see a bit more when the legislation actually comes forward. But it's clearly designed to make a strong statement in the wake of the terrorist attack in Melbourne and the allegedly thwarted one that saw three people arrested recently again in Melbourne. The yes. government is using those as an example of what we need to prevent going forward.
I guess my question on this, Josh, would be that if you have someone who's been convicted of a terrorism offence, why you would basically set them free in another country rather than lock them up?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, I think it's a popular sort of position to take that, you know, we don't want these people in this country and we're going to do whatever we can to keep them out of this country. If they're in another country, not our problem. I mean, it's interesting. Matthew Guy has tried to get in on this as well. He's, even though it's a very much a federal issue, he's promising a sort of dedicated unit, if he wins, that would work with the federal government to ensure that people who should be deported are deported. So he obviously sees political mileage out of this in Victoria at the state level as well, which I think is interesting.
Now, Karen, the other big story in Canberra, of course, this week was around energy, and we had battling energy policies. What was the wash up in that?
Well, we didn't really have battling energy policy because we've only seen one. The government still doesn't have one. So
well, there's that, yes.
But the interesting twist is that the one the Labor Party presented is the government's old policy. So
if anyone's confused by this at home, you're not alone.
And, you know, they of course, are trying to take the high moral ground and say they are trying to do something about bringing prices down and also about climate change, whereas the government isn't. And there's no politics involved whatsoever, but there is a bit of politics involved because they've adopted the government's basic national energy guarantee, which was the thing upon which Malcolm Turnbull's yes. leadership so spectacularly founded, to the point where they're actually using the same language. I mean, Bill Shorten's opening gambit when he unveiled this yesterday was using the same words that that the previous government had used about it, affordability, reliability, sustainability. That was the catchphrase they used.
Someone will do a mashup of Bill Shorten and Josh Frydenberg shortly with the same words. And Josh, yeah. it's spilt over into the Victorian campaign and amusingly so, and testament too to the I don't know what it is, the sort of logic sapping powers of David Spears as an interviewer. He was talking to the Liberal candidate for Frankston, Matthew Lamb, about a hypothetical power station in Victoria. We don't have that. I could act it out for you because it was pretty much a Clark Dawe sketch. In fact, the one in which the people who are fans of the form will know where the front fell off. It wasn't. I put it to you, Josh, Mr. Lamb's finest moment.
No, I mean, I dare say he didn't have a good night when he went home at the end of the day. Look, it was just a sort of great example of how confounding energy policy could be. Frankston is a very marginal seat. It's held by Labor by 0.5%. So he's a cop. The Liberal Party really want to win this seat back. They lost in 2014. And it was just one of those classic campaign train wreck interviews where it kept on going around in circles. He said, oh, it's not. Initially, he basically said it's not going to involve government money. we're going to put it out to tender and then let the market decide. And of course, David Spears, in his inimitable way, said, well, hang on, if you're putting it out to tender, doesn't that mean it involves government money? And he said, no, it's up to the market.
Good news. Here it is. Have a listen.
They don't do, I'm just a little, still a little unsure.
So we're going around in circles.
No, that's why I'm just trying to establish.
All my understanding of it is that we will tender to get private industry to build a power station.
Okay, with a bit of help from the state, presumably.
Yes.
So a bit of taxpayers' money.
Yes.
Right, because you earlier said it wouldn't be.
Sorry.
A wonderful end there, Karen.
it was horrendous to watch. I was wincing all the way through my fingers. You know, it was just, oh.
Oh, yeah. Look, a fitting conclusion to a sort of a mucky weed of state politics. And to conclude our chat, it behoves both of you to give us some recommendations. Karen, are you going to be watching the telly this weekend?
I've been watching the telly the last few weekends, and I'm going to recommend the Pine Gap series on the ABC, which is bingeable on iView, but it's been on Sunday nights. And that, it's great, actually. I mean, I'm a bit of a security international relations nerd, but it's also, it's very cleverly melds the whole issue of human relationships and people living out in the desert and the pressures that they come under with the complexities of the relationship between Australia and the US, and China, the whole region, and then just security policy issues. It's really well done.
Oh, well, there you go. So when Anthony Green calls the Victorian election at about, I suspect, 7:04 tomorrow night, switch over to Pine Gap on iView. Josh Gordon, you've got something musical for us.
Yeah, look, I love this band called The Gloaming. It's got a fiddle player in it called Martin Hayes, who's a sort of violin hero of mine. I play the violin as well, so I really love this band, and I think people should check it out.
Kept your light under a bushel.
I do, yes.
Should have brought it in. Makes mental note, next time Josh comes in, make sure he brings violin. Never
mix politics and violin.
But that is wise words. Wrapping the week there with Karen Middleton and Josh Gordon, and I have a recommendation as well. It's this.
The sun will set on my time here and will rise with you as the new king.
I think you know what this is. Yes, it is the Lion King action trailer. There's a Lion King action movie coming. I mean, they're all computerized, but they're real little things. They're not cartoons anymore. They're actual little lion cubs and lion cubs' dads and baboons and warthogs and all of that. It's out next year, but you can get a taste of that on the internet. Just look for Lion King live action trailer. Josh, Karen, thank you so much.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Drive here on RN.